Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out. Say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're gonna talk about a lot of the same stuff this week because we mostly both watch the same things.
Yes, we definitely got to the same things, which has not been an oddity, but it's just been like we have similar interests, but sometimes we just kind of go in different directions during the week. But this one we managed to hit all the big ones this week. So I'm kind of glad that we're going to be able to talk about that because it is a source of frustration for me not being able to get to stuff.
You asked me before we started recording if I watched anything else, and I just thought about it. Two things. One, Good Omens finale.
Oh. Okay.
It's good. If you enjoy them, mm-hmm. like their dynamic, it is a lot of fun. That series or whatever you want to call it has been so inconsistent in release.
That, yes. Like,
because I feel like it's been at least 2 years since the last set, if not a little bit longer. And maybe I'm wrong in that, but it feels like we've gotten what amounts to like 8 or 10 episodes, maybe in a 7 year span. So it's like,
yeah,
it might not be 7 years. It might be only six, but I don't remember when that first, like, it's to like, I couldn't remember what the hell anything was about. And they do their best to kind of give you a catch up, but it really isn't enough. It's okay.
I mean, it's so long that I actually went to see the first Good Omens pre-pandemic, like the first series pre-pandemic, with a Q&A by who's now persona non grata. Neil Gaiman. Like, that's how long ago it was. They, like,
7 years, I was right.
Yeah, 2019.
13 like, episodes over 7 years.
Yep.
So
it's a very weird way to approach a series. And, like, if you had done it all, like, I understand that, like, the second part got just like demolished because you literally are in the middle of beginning to film and you hit the pandemic. Like, yeah. And like literally hard pandemic. Like I remember series two was like filming when pandemic hit. It was one of those things that shut down. And it was at a time where like if you watch the first series, like it's an Amazon series that they threw a lot of money at. Like it was like a big series. I stopped watching when I watched the second set of episodes, and the quality just kind of dipped from the first.
And this is even a dip from, because you can tell this was like, we will give you enough money to do one thing.
Yeah.
And wrap up whatever you can wrap up, and they're like, there's no special effects budget. There's a few things that, like, it looks like they spent their money on, but you know, he has the car that can like travel.
Yeah, it's
basically the fucking Back to the Future car, but it can travel through like dimensions or whatever. And there's some effects work with the car that's not great, but it's fun, it's funny, their dynamic is so fantastic, but it's also a thing you can get for free. Like, you can watch them like be themselves with each other for free on the internet. Like, you can go to YouTube and watch their little back and forth stuff, and like, so like that might be a better use of your time.
though, like, if you know about Michael, if you know about Michael Sheen's philanthropic stuff and how much of his salary, which is like literally 90% of the salary, like that he gets goes to like these philanthropic things, like literally homelessness. Like he's like if you know anything about him, like it's almost like you kind of want to watch it or at least turn it on and leave it in the background and do your thing.
It's definitely worth watching. It's just not, it's a very disappointing end to what started as a really, really fun dynamic thing. And mostly it's because, I mean, it's funny, very similarly, another Amazon series is about to come to an end. And it also feels extremely disappointing. Like I haven't talked really about The Boys at all this year, other than to say like The Boys is back and it's still The Boys. But like, this is their last season and literally they have one more episode, and this past week's episode did not feel like, oh, we only have one more episode. Like it's so half-hearted that like, I don't understand it.
I mean, like, let's be honest. They spent their wad last season. Like, that's like, I started to try to watch that first episode. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? Like, what is going on here? Like, help me understand, like, why you're okay. So, are you that invested?
The premiere of this season, where they're like all in an internment camp, and you're like,
yes,
what happened between the end of last season and this season?
So yes,
well, it's not till like the third episode that they kind of info dump on you, like that there was a massive, like they jump like months ahead,
which they don't say anything.
Right.
And I had to like, I literally stopped the episode and then I had like, I literally spoiled the thing for myself because I was like, okay, maybe Gen V is something that I like, maybe that's what Logan was talking about and how it connects. And I'm like, let me go ahead and do. And so I did research. I was like, no, it's just terrible storytelling. And so I was like, you know what? I'll wait till the last episode and then I'll just run through it. And that's what I'm going to do. But I'm going to tell you that it was not the way to start, especially considering how good last season was. Like, do you know what I mean? Like it was like they didn't like Vought Rising and whatever other Boys projects kind of took his eye.
Like for sure. Vought Rising for sure. Because, Soldier Boy feels so like wedged into like just whatever they can get him into in this season, just so that it's in people's minds like, hey, don't forget that we have a prequel show coming. Mm-hmm. Yes, this show is ending. And unfortunately, like, and you'll see, you didn't watch Gen V, right?
So, no, I did not.
Like, it doesn't really mean that much to you, but like, the Gen V season 2 was really good. Gen V season 1 was pretty damn good too. I think it was consistently a better show than The Boys has been, because The Boys has been up and down a lot.
Yeah.
But the Gen V characters have shown up the last few seasons and in very minor roles, and they show up again in this season and they get sidelined very quickly, but they filmed that not knowing that Gen V was going to be canceled. So knowing now that we're not going to see those characters again, it feels like such a slap in the face. I mean, they couldn't have known that Amazon was gonna be like, yeah, we're not gonna give you any more money for that. But The Boys Mexico is coming. Okay.
Yeah, I saw that. I'm like, okay, like you guys are like Amazon is very heavy duty on this building worlds thing, because like they spent a lot of money on the Russo brothers Citadel thing that has like literally four different seasons. Like it has four different seasons in four different countries. Like there's Korea India, America, and then like back to America. But you have to watch them all. It's very weird. Like, and then I've heard that Fallout is going to be like that. They're chalking Fallout spin-offs. They are really truly spin-outs. Like, it's a very weird thing for Amazon to do. Like, focus on making a good thing and then do the other thing. Don't try to, like, Taylor Sheridan it with fucking 30 shows and, like, you know, I'm sorry, you know, like, I can tell when AI is being used to write shit, and it really does feel like it sometimes, you know. I don't know, man. Like, I'm just, like, The Boy, like, okay, so for me, and I was going to ask you about this, it's, like, The Boys is a big commitment because, like, I'm going to talk to you about something else that I watched that was like, oh, shit, I shouldn't have watched that on a Friday night. It's a big commitment because it's a high anxiety kind of show.
Especially now.
Yeah.
Like, it is so, like, it's weird how often the show does something only for it to, like, echo. Like, right is either right before or right after the episode airs, we're seeing it in the real world, only without superpowers. And it's become really, really, anxiety inducing is a good, a good way to put it. So,
and I was wondering, is it still applicable? Because, like, I turn off all mentions of The Boys because, like, even last season for me, it was like, okay, I saw the thing. You don't need to comment on it. But then everybody's fucking commenting on it. And everybody's joking about it or death scrolling on it. And I'm like, fuck you guys. I don't need this. I'm going to just mute you. Is it the same way except for it's just a lesser of a show? So it just doesn't seem important?
I mean, kind of, yeah. I mean, it's definitely still, like, there's a whole subplot. I mean, semi-spoilers, but there's
subplot. Go for it.
About Homelander seeing, like, having this vision that he is now God.
Oh, good Lord. Okay.
And so he's basically saying that the Christian church doesn't matter and wanting, like, everybody to denounce their religions and proclaim him the God of America. And it's we're not there, but it feels like we're so close to that in real life that it's just like, oh, is this what we have to look forward to? But
gotcha.
In the show, that winds up being like maybe the step too far for a lot of people. So, you know, maybe we have that to look forward to. Then, like, oh, wait, no, we can't follow you here, man. And, you know, those people they do have the money that is their superpower, but they don't have, like, legitimate superpowers where they can just, you know, get their buddies who can use mind control to change your mind for you. So,
yeah.
It's definitely anxiety inducing.
Okay.
The Boys actually wasn't the other. The other thing was a returning show that you also don't watch, which I understand why. Welcome to Wrexham is back this week. And it had a 2-episode premiere, which means I spent about 90 minutes sitting on the couch fucking crying.
Oh.
Just crying.
No. That's it's more of the same then. It's more of this let's tell emotional stories like, here's the thing is, like, we've never talked about it because it's just kind of like it's one of those things where it's just like, okay, like Ryan Reynolds has become more Rob McElhenney than Rob McElhenney in the dislike column. Are you still the same? Are you still like, that doesn't matter to you, or
it doesn't. Okay. Like, they are still a heavy focus of the show, but, like, if you watch it, once you kind of have been inundated with their shit, like, which more or less works on me. Like, I either find them like mildly annoying and it's just like doesn't matter, or I find it entertaining. So, but even if their shit doesn't work on you at all, if you're like, I hate this, it becomes so much about the team and the town, but specifically the town and
gotcha.
The people in, and like what this means to them. Like, I watched them both together, so it's hard to remember which episode covered this, but one of the episodes was about, so there was a Wrexham supporter, a young kid, who kind of was like in the background, like literally they pull shots from like season one of this kid. Like that's how big of a supporter is that he wound up in the background of the show a few times.
Oh,
And he had an accident, fell out of a car, cracked his head on the pavement. 2 days later, he thought he was fine. 2 days later, he died of like a massive brain bleed.
Oh God.
And his parents agreed to donate. And I say kid, he was like 19. But I'm fucking almost 50. So he's a child. His parents agreed to donate his organs, and the guy who received his heart reached out to his parents and wanted to meet them, which is apparently something that rarely happens. In the show, I think they say like maybe 5% of donors and recipients ever agree to meet in real life because it can be so traumatic for either side. And they were open to meeting them, and they meet him and go to a fucking Wrexham game.
Oh,
and it's just a lot, man. Like, not in a bad way. In a, like, this world sucks in so many ways right now. Mm-hmm. They're like, I'm just sitting on the couch. And like, this is hopeful stuff, you know? And yes, it's about a soccer/football team, but it's also about like what this, I mean, you know, because you're a sports guy, like what this can mean to people, you know, and to a city, and how it can bring people together. I mean, like Paul McCartney gave an interview this past week, and he was talking about like how divisive everything is, especially in the United States right now, but how he can go out there and know that, you know, half his audience supports Trump and half of his audience hates Trump. But like when he starts singing Hey Jude, it just doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah. For that three minutes, it doesn't matter. Yeah.
And like, that's, you know, it seems like he's saying that, you know, it doesn't matter who you vote for. It does, but like it's the idea of like the things that can unite us, and we're so focused on the things that do divide us, and like, you know, it's that kind of shit. And so Wrexham, Welcome to Wrexham has become like, that's what I look forward to. Not Rob and fucking his nonsense and, you know, whatever Ryan Reynolds is getting up to. And then they also deal with like, you know, they went back to back to back promotions, which has never been done and was absolutely insane. And
yeah, I did hear about that. Like, and how like rare, like, did they, like on the show, did they comment on like an equivalent? Cause like, I was gonna, when you talk, but like, I read it in the news and nobody could give a good comp. I knew what
there,
it meant.
There really isn't a good, because it's not winning back to back championships. It would be like you started as a
an A ball team, right? And went to like the major leagues.
And then found yourself fucking facing off in the major, like suddenly, like 3 years ago. 4 years ago, you were playing A-ball, and now you're playing the fucking Yankees. And it's like, how are we here? But part of that is, like, as you promote, you're playing higher caliber teams, you have to get higher caliber talent. So as you go, like, now they're in the Championship League, which is one step down from the Premier, which is top. You can't compete with the guys that you had two leagues ago. So all these people that got you there
have to go.
They're not good. Like, it's not a comment on their character, because, like, I watched a lot of these players on this show and got to know, and like the Rob and Ryan got to know them, but it becomes a, we have to be able to compete at this level, and those people are not at that level. Like, they're either older, like, you know, like Roy Kent, kind of for the Ted Lasso comparison, where it's like, he could still play, but he couldn't compete at the Jamie Tartt level, you know, like he's just older, or it's just guys that were never that level of competition. And you have to be willing to, it gets into a little bit of the, like,
kill your darlings
side. Where it's like, you hear, like, the fans that are part of the show, you know, like, why did Ollie Palmer have to go? Like, these people that we loved, why didn't you at least give them a chance? And it's like, they're in there day in and day out, and they're like, we know you can't compete. And then the flip side of that is, like, you love those guys and you hate to see them go, but then they bring all these new guys in and they've never worked as a fucking team. So you've got all these new higher caliber players that are supposed to be able to compete, but they've never worked as a team. So they're not competing at the level that they should be anyway. And so, like, the sports drama of it is really great. The town aspect is the absolute best part, like what it means to the people that live there, more so than even like baseball. Like, you get to understand what these soccer clubs mean to these towns that they're in. Like, it is almost the heartbeat of the town, and like I just love it. I absolutely love it. It is so, like, I don't know. It gets me more than any other thing, where, like, as soon as the fucking theme song starts, I'm like, well, I'm going to start crying. And sure enough, like when they started talking about the kid, I was like, motherfucker. And then, like, the other episode was mostly about a guy who played for Wrexham, like, back in the day. And I mean, he was much older, but they called him Mr. Wrexham, and he died in the off season. And it's like his best friend, like the whole episode is his best friend basically like recounting his tales and talking about how much he loved him. And like they built a tribute to him, and it's, you know, not, it's sad, but it's cathartic, you know.
Okay.
Where it's just like, this is just life, you know. It sucks that people die, but, like, you know, watching these people get to live on is, you know, really something. And so yeah, it's one of the best shows on TV. And like, I get that Rob and Ryan can be a little like, it's like, yeah, I'm tired of their shit, but so much of that show is just about the people outside of that, that it, it's fucking great.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I mean, like, again, like, maybe I might end up catching up with it, but like I said, like, I have a low tolerance for McElhaney and his bullshit. So
earlier seasons, it's a lot of Robin.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing. And also because I know that they sold a big part of their ownership stake, from what I understand, right? So of course it's going to be a little bit less.
The money's got to come from somewhere. Like, one of the things that they get into in this season is this. You will appreciate this. Sorry, I'm going on and on about this show. One of the subplots for one of the early episodes is, all right, so there's another, it's Sheffield Wednesday, which there's a joke in Ted Lasso about we're playing Sheffield Wednesday on a Friday.
Yeah.
Like, so I knew who Sheffield Wednesday was. I was like, oh, I know them. That team was also bought several years ago by some billionaire douchebag. And things didn't go as planned. Fans kind of revolted. The guy stopped putting money into the club, and they've slowly just become a shell of themselves. And the fans literally go to the games and just shout chants about how much they hate the owner and to sell the team. Like, they're supporting the players, but hating on the owner at the same time. So they're playing Wrexham in Wrexham. The fans of Sheffield Wednesday decide to show up in protest, wear these gold jerseys, and chant, you know, their usual chants about selling the team. So Wrexham had a gold jersey kit last year. Rob, I don't know that it was his idea, so I don't want to like credit him if it's somebody else's idea, but he did put out a tweet that they had boxes of the gold jersey kits from last year. They were selling them to the Wrexham supporters. All of the profits from the jersey were going to the player fund for Sheffield Wednesday. And would the Wrexham fans please show up in support in the gold jerseys for the opposite team? And they sold out of gold jerseys.
Wow.
So you have all of these Wrexham supporters cheering on their team to win, yeah, but in support of the cause that the fans and the players of Sheffield Wednesday, because apparently the Sheffield club, people, like the players aren't getting paid, the staff isn't getting paid.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's that level of like fuckery. And so like, that's the kind of thing that is just like, yeah, man, like, You won't ever see that in American sports.
No. Like,
maybe in a like some kind of minor league capacity, but like it gets so just stupidly divisive and heated with, you know, our major sports sometimes that you really wouldn't see something like that. And it's just heartwarming. Like, to see these people buying gold jerseys in support of another team's cause, and knowing that that money's going to go to help that team. And, you know, it's really fucking heartwarming. So, it's just, like, hits in all the feels, man. So,
no, absolutely.
I love Welcome to Wrexham. And I try to, because the show is a year, like almost a year behind.
Yeah.
Well, so I think like 6 months or so behind the actual stuff that's happening. So I do my damnedest to avoid knowing anything about what's going on in the Wrexham season so that I can watch it in the show. Last year got spoiled for me. I saw pretty early on that they got back-to-back promotions. I was like, oh, well, they're getting promoted at the end of the season, so that's good, I guess.
Okay. All right. Absolutely. Well, we'll have to check that out. I wanted to, like, I don't know whether this is a warning or a critique. So have you heard of, okay, so there's a filmmaker out there, and part of the reason why I watched his most recent doc was because I'd seen two previous docs from him, and he also has a movie coming out that I'm seeing on Sunday called Tuner, which is a crime film, but a very unique crime film because it's...
I really want to see that.
Yeah, they're doing an advanced screening on Sunday, so like if your AMC might actually have it playing, or one of your local theater chains. It's directed by Daniel Rohner. And he's a documentarian that I've watched a few of his stuff. So he had a doc that came out this year called The AI Doc, or How I Became an Optimist. Okay.
I've heard about this.
Yes. I want to tell people, you may, if you have anxiety about where AI is headed, do not watch this documentary, because the whole last part of it, or How I Became an Apocaloptimist, is very much what do they call it? A Roman Clef. Like it's supposed to be taken as satire, because there is no hope in this documentary. Like it supposedly is, but there isn't. Like literally, it's set up so that the guy who directed it, Daniel Roehner, finds out as he's making his latest documentary, like AI is rising, it's in the news, and it becomes a very big inflection point for him and his wife. And so he decides to start to investigate AI and gets a lot of the big people interviewed. And I'm going to tell you, this doc, for a guy who interviewed, like, there's a documentary that he did where he dives into the assassination attempt of one of Putin's political rivals, and like it's a pretty damning portrait. And the assassination attempt about Navalny. That's what the title of the documentary, and that's the title of the guy. It's when you do that, and you do a pretty strong investigative journalism kind of point of view, you manage to get an Oscar nomination. You're a journalist, right? This really feels like a real softball it starts off as a real fucking, it gives you all of the anxiety that you're worried about AI. And it interviews all of these people that are the architects of AI. And then when it's like, you know, that point in JFK where Costner is reading the Warren report and he's like, answer the question, ask the questions. That's literally what you're doing during the doc. You're like, ask these motherfuckers the question. Ask them the hard question. Ask them why they're doing this. Because we know what the answer is. It's money. Money, 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 money. Ask them, though. Get them on camera so that we can see how shitty these people are. These supposed ethicists. And ask the college professors that are charting this what they feel. Like, ask the hard questions. It doesn't. And what he proposes ultimately at the end of the doc, or at the end of the thing about how, where he feels it's going to go is there's a reason why it was bought by Universal, is because it doesn't give any answers. It's like a good documentary should give some answer, or like more importantly, a point of view. And I'm just like, okay, I turned it off. I was like, well, that was not something I should have watched on a Friday night, because it was anxiety inducing. And I don't mind that, as long as you can give me a rich wealth of content and understanding. So I documentaries are like nonfiction, right? You want to come back a better understood person about that particular topic, especially if it's something that you know has a wealth of information. There's not much. There's not much there that I didn't know. And a lot of it was kind of like I said, I literally sat there like, answer the question, ask the questions. And he wasn't. And I think that part of it was that, you get access to, you get access to heavies like Sam Altman, and you don't get to ask the questions, or you don't want to piss them off, which I'm like, real guys would have. I mean, one of my favorite documentaries of all time is Fog of War, which is about Robert McNamara, right? And yeah. and they ask him the hard questions about Vietnam. They really do. They go hard at him. And, like, it's a chess game, and that documentary is a chess game. And if you've ever wanted to truly understand, like, and McNamara was the for people that don't know, he was the architect of the Vietnam War. And the real reasons why we got into Vietnam, and the real reasons why we stayed there for years and years and years. And if you really want to know, and the title is very, Fog of War, it's very interesting, the reason why that doc is titled that, because it's not about, it's not about the fog of war in the fog of war, it's society's fog of war. And Errol Morris is I hope to God that Errol Morris is doing an AI doc, because that would mean that I would probably get a lot of mileage out of it. But this one is just, it's not. Like, I was a little disappointed because the Daniels did it. And I know how heavy the Daniels are in interest in the AI world, but also how they want to bring it into the collective of artistry and not just people typing, how it can actually help people make art, not fucking people make me a kitty, make me Kitty Tom Cruise, and not that stuff, but actual genuine tools to help artists. And it just doesn't seem like it's anything that I can truly get behind. So yeah. That it was really disappointing. I'm still excited to see Tuner, because everything that I've seen from the previews and all that, it's genuinely looks like a unique
trailer is pretty damn good.
Yeah, it's a very effective trailer. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm going to see that on Sunday. That was the only thing that I that was worth noting. On the AI bent, I did see that Alan Ritchson War Machine movie, and that was just trash. I'm going to say something, and it's not a hot take. It's a take. It's a thing. When you from now on, whenever I see Dennis Quaid show up in a motherfucker, I know it's going to be a bad movie. And he shows up right at the beginning.
I hate that because I don't know. Dennis Quaid used to be one of those guys that I'm like,
he was the rookie.
He's not in enough. He's such a good actor. And the last few years, every time he shows up in something, I'm like, it's just not that great.
No, it's terrible. And if Alan Ritchson doesn't, here's the other thing I took away from it. If Alan Ritchson doesn't fire his agents and managers and gets whoever's Carl Urban's manager, he's in trouble. Because this movie sucked. I'm fairly certain, whenever you co-star with Kevin James, that movie's gonna suck. What are you doing? I know there's an indie movie that's coming out, this indie action movie. I can't remember, something called Something City, where it's basically told with no dialogue. And it's him and what's her name? I can't think of her name. That looks promising because it's set in the 70s. It's kind of it looks definitely one of those things that I'm this could be something, but you're starring in stuff that's called Ordinary Angels, Ghosts of War, Above the Shadows, Playdate, The Wedding Ringer. Half of these movies are by Angel Studios, and I'm sorry, but Angel Studios fucking sucks.
What is going on with them? They are emerging as it's not a lot of good product they're putting out, but it's a lot of product.
Well, okay, so the thing is that they have made, they made the animated movie, that those two animated movies that got released in 2023 and 2024 that literally made $100 million that nobody noticed. the like the Joseph one, and then I can't remember the other one. Maybe it might have been Jesus, it might have been Moses. But they made the, like these really cheaply made like animated movies, yeah. But they were starring, like they paid out for voice actors like Patrick Stewart and Oscar Isaac. Like they were paying money for these movies and like for these actors, and they made a whole bunch of money. So they basically reinvested that money. Like they first made that stupid sex trafficker movie that was produced by the sex trafficker that starred Jesus, actor Jesus, Jim Caviezel.
Yeah.
That made like $150 million. Like made a lot of money. But then like, you know, the most ironic thing was that it was about sex trafficking produced by a sex trafficker, right? And so they have re-put in that money into their productions. Like they are smart in that regard, because instead of doing what most Hollywood places do, which is it's run by a bunch of fucking crooks and they just take the money away and they leave just enough to make shitty movies, these guys actually took all of that money, left a little bit for themselves, but then re-put in, because they are trying to make a studio and they are basically doing it. So yeah,
their big release earlier this year was like the Kevin James movie, right?
Yep.
Solo Mio.
Yeah.
And like it didn't light up, but like I think it like won a few days in its box office run, where yep. like it's not substantial, you know. It's not like a breakout rom-com hit or whatever. But it was like, no, that made pretty good money. And they're attracting, like, legit stars. And, I mean, the animal and Andy Serkis Animal Farm movie wound up being released by Angel Studios, which is baffling. I get, like, that well, in and of itself makes me want to see the movie to see, like, there's no way you're actually adapting Animal Farm.
They aren't. They didn't. They really rounded off the edges. That was the thing that got... So, you know, the whole thing was that Serkis made this thing and Netflix wouldn't release it. And part of the reason why Netflix wouldn't release it is because it was so dark. And they didn't want to do changes, or they wanted him to do changes, but he didn't want to do it. But then, finally, Angel Studios swooped in, bought it, and basically said, we'll give a theatrical release to it. But you got to cut some of the, you got to shave some of the edges off of it. So he did, because he got a theatrical release, and that's how they got people. And that's how they're getting people, is because a lot of these guys are streamer guys. Like Kevin James is a streamer guy right now. I mean, like fucking yeah. Look like the Playdate movie, like Jesus Christ. Like I hate to say this, but 2-time Academy Award winning actress Hilary Swank is no longer a commodity. She is a streaming actress, right? She has to be in those types of movies. But then Angel Studio comes along and says, I want to make a movie with you about a hairdresser who like saves the life of your, like who saves the life of a young girl. Like, and it's like one of those heartwarming movies, but it has a huge Christian bent in it because it's, you know, it's Angel Studios. So you're going to have to do that, but it's going to get a theatrical release and we're going to put it in 2000 theaters. Well, yep. I mean, if you're Hilary Swank and you're going to make your comp and you're going to make $5 million doing it. Like when Hollywood has done you dirty, right? Like when the last thing that you did was like a psychosexual thriller, right? Like that's the last thing you did. Fatale, which came out in 2020. I think it was 2020. When Fatale came, like I said, that's the last thing she did. And it got released in theaters, but everything else has been streaming. Of course you're going to go with Angel Studios. Of course you're going to make, like, they're making your comp. Are you kidding me? So it's this weird thing where, like, if you read about the producers, like, they are, yeah. They're not like their like allegiances and stuff. No, not so good. Not so good. I mean, I'm not saying that all of them are sex traffickers, but I mean, when you align yourself with a sex trafficker, you kind of know what they're fucking doing. you kind of know. Like, I mean, like, you can't, you don't turn a blind eye to that shit. Like a creep like that, that has hundreds of millions of dollars, is not going to be not a creep, right? Like, so I don't know. It's a very weird situation, but they're like, you cannot deny that they are a force, because like you said, Solo Mio, like that made $30 million. Like a fucking Kevin James movie in 2026. This man is close to 60 years old. Like he really, like this is the guy that made Paul Blart Mall Cop. And the only reason why he's a fucking star is because Adam Sandler and the King of Queens.
Yeah.
Like there should be no reason why this guy should be me. Like, but there he is. Like, was number two at the box office. Like, you know, like the movie came in at number two and made $30 million. Probably made a little bit of a profit, right? Like, and Alan Ritchson, nobody knows what to do with him. So what are they doing? Fucking the Angel Studios is hiring them for everything that they do that's like action oriented. Like literally everything that they do. Like there's a movie coming out about an organ donor that has him and Owen Wilson. Have you seen that trailer? Runner?
Yeah.
I'm like, with drug dealers, and I'm like, what? Okay. Directed by the guy who did the Navy SEALs starring as Navy SEALs. Movie that's terrible, but it's also like the action scenes are really good. Acts of Valor. I don't know if you remember that movie. Do you remember
vaguely?
It like came out, like it was literally like, you can look at the trailer. I mean, it made a sum of money because it came out around the time that it was around the time that almost Osama bin Laden died, or they killed Osama bin Laden. And it was like at the height of like, you know, CIA operators and Navy SEALs and all that stuff. So they made this movie that was like the director of it, like made it because like the whole focus was it's Navy SEALs, but instead of starring Charlie Sheen, it's starring all of the real life Navy SEALs doing all the real life Navy SEALs stuff, but also being in drama. And as you can imagine, the drama was very flat. But the action was pretty impressive. They do a jump out of a C-130, like a high altitude jump, before Tom Cruise did it. It's pretty impressive. Like, it was like made for like $4 million, but you could tell that like it looks like it's made for $50 million, because of just like what they were able to do with these guys. But anywho, So Alan Ritchson, I have no idea. Like, I really like the dude. I love his Reacher show. I love the Reacher show. I love the books more than I love the show. The show is very Amazon-y. And I mean, we're going to be talking about a Guy Ritchie film later, but like, you know, the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, like Alan Ritchson is so great in that. Yeah. So anyhow, I don't know. Like, the movie is terrible. It's ass. Don't watch it. It's a Netflix special. You can tell why Lionsgate, because this was originally going to be theatrical, but then all of a sudden Netflix, it was going to be on Netflix. You can tell why Lionsgate sold it to Netflix.
Somebody watched it on a big screen and was like, oh no, we can't put this on screens.
Yeah. Yeah. No. It's like, oh God, like we know why. And then we're going to be talking to him about a movie in a second that I'm going to ask you, like, I guess we might as well get into it. We both saw another shark movie that came out, but this one on Netflix.
If you're going to watch a shark movie, I would say go see the super cheesy one in theaters that I mentioned, last week with, Ben Kingsley. And the Deep Water, like that's, I think that's the better movie. But if you don't have the money to go to the theater and you want to watch a shark movie, Thrash is it's a good time. I don't think it's a good movie though.
Oh no, it's not. Okay, let us be honest. This is not a good movie. But why wasn't this movie released in theaters in September when there's nothing out there?
I don't know. Like, I think it could have, I think you're right, it could have done okay. But I mean, you know, especially with Netflix losing the Warner Brothers deal, like their play for theatrical, like is gonna lessen, unfortunately. Now maybe next year's box office run of Narnia will pull them back into it. But yeah, I'm with you. Like we would have gone to see this on the big screen. It probably would have been a fun, like just as fun time. I will say this though, I enjoy being able to watch it at home and actively comment on
yes
the level of stupidity of some of the things. I think I made a joke to Stephanie about like this should be called, it's like Schrodinger's shark.
Yes.
Or like Chekhov's shark. It's this whole like, is it there, isn't there with the Schrodinger thing, but like also like everything you see in the first like 10 minutes of the movie becomes a thing for the rest of the movie. Like, oh, there's a pregnant woman. And they specifically have her have a conversation with her mother about how she doesn't want to give a water birth. And I'm like, so she's going to give birth to this baby in the water, right? And that's exactly what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. I commented to Christina when we were watching it, like when at the point where I think she goes, like she has the baby and then she's outside because the house collapsed. When she says something along the lines of mommy has to go fight a shark, I literally yeah. was like, okay, so this movie definitely knows the yes. movie it is. It's that kind of movie. It's the kind of movie that has foster parents that are hiding.
Oh my God. That kid's accent is so bad. Like I we were watching it. I was like, I know him. And I looked him up. I was like, oh yeah, he was in Preacher for like a minute. And I was like, I think he's from New Zealand. And the more he talked, I was like, that kid's definitely Australian or New Zealand. And so I pulled him back up. I was like, oh yeah, I got called it. He's from down under, man.
Okay. We were talking about, oh yeah, the kid, you recognize the kid.
Yeah. And his terrible
accent.
Yeah, it's so bad.
Yeah, it really is. Well, I mean, like this, like you said, like this is the kind of film that has the worst foster parents of all time.
Yeah,
and then brings the foster parent back after you think he's dead, and only to kill him again. It was
Dude is so despicable. They literally bring him back to life just so you can watch them kill him again.
Exactly. 100%. 100%. So yeah, it's a lot of fun because of the way that you react to the movie. It's not one of those movies that it's not good. It's bad, but it's like it relishes, it understands what it is. Like it's a true B movie that understands what it is, and it doesn't try to be anything other than what it is. And I appreciated that.
Yeah.
A lot. Like I would have had a hell of a fun time laughing at it in the theaters if they had released it, but Sony decided to sell it, to Netflix, and as they do often with their, with some of their stuff, and it's on Netflix to everybody's benefit so they can watch it. I also know why is because the main actress, the pregnant doctor, Phoebe Denever, is actually from she has ties to Netflix. She's a part of Bridgerton.
Oh, okay.
That's
I don't watch Bridgerton, so
yeah.
Yeah.
That's probably the reason why they sold it to them. But I would not be surprised because remember, like at the end, they're like it's almost setting it up for a sequel. And I would not be surprised. Sure. I totally would not be surprised if they set that.
I love that that Digimon Hunts Out is in like a completely different movie.
Completely different.
Everybody else. And then like gets to swoop in at the end and kind of just be savior. Like, cause he's in this like super serious like drama that has a slightly goofy premise, and everybody else is in like just a goofy shark movie.
Yeah, well, like my favorite moment in the movie is the self-aware moment he has with the news anchor, where he goes, I went to the city and I told them about the big ass hippopotamus. Not what the hell are you talking about? Like, I loved that like, moment.
What'd you do? Stab it with your spear? And he's like, where do you think I lived? Like, I didn't live in a hut. I lived in a city.
Like, I absolutely loved that, because you could see it coming from a mile away, because it's like, you know, shitty characters get shitty things happen to them. But ultimately, it's a lot of fun. And if you know Tommy Rikola, he's the director of Hansel and Gretel, Witch Hunters, Violent Night, the Dead Snow movies. So you know this is the kind of movie that he's making. And the other thing, the interesting part is, he is the original director of The Trip, which was recently remade to a movie that we really loved, which is Till Death Do We Part. And that's also on Netflix. So if you actually do end up having a good time with Thrash and you want to check out more of his work, check out The Trip, because Till Death Do We Part is still not out yet in streaming, but it will be shortly.
Yeah. All right. So elsewhere on streaming, we both had a, I guess, a John Bernthal mini
marathon. Yeah. Mini festival. Yes. Do we want to talk about Gary, or do we want to talk about Punisher One Last Kill?
My sentiments on both of them are almost exactly the same, but we can start with Gary, which is a bear special kind of setup. It's a prequel, but it, you know, kind of is like a primer for like going into this, what is going to be the final season of The Bear this summer. It's about, I can't remember his name.
Richie. It's about Richie and Jimmy, or Richie and Mikey. Richie and Mikey do a thing for Uncle Jimmy, or Jimmy, and they have to go to Gary. Like, basically, it's they have to take a package to Gary, Indiana, and they spend the day in Gary, Indiana, but they have to be back by 5:15 because this takes place in the past, and Richie is still together with his ex-wife Tiff, and she's super preggos. And the reason why they have to be back by 5:15 is because she has this thing that she thinks she's going to give birth to their child before then. Yes. And basically, it's all of the shenanigans that Mikey and Richie, who spend most of the thing either drunk or high on coke or both, get up to in Gary, Indiana. Is only about, like, if you know Chicago, it's only about a 45-minute drive away from Chicago. So it's just outside of Chicago and just outside of Illinois and in Indiana. But it's also known as like a ghost town. It's one of those small towns that was a thriving boom town in the 30s and 40s and even in the 50s, and then just went dead in the 60s and has remained dead. Just for a little bit of context for those people that aren't from the Midwest or don't have family in the Midwest like I do, that know about this kind of stuff, that like, you know, make our, like, you know, like I have family that lived in, like, they live in Wisconsin, of course, but like, you know, like all Wisconsin's, you eventually end up in Chicago making your bones, making your money, you know, working there, and, you know, either loving it or hating it. But anyways, so Yeah, that it's exactly what you would think from a Mikey and Richie adventure, from what you've gleaned off of those two in the early part of The Bear.
It's so funny because early on in The Bear, Richie is so just problematic and uncomfortable and
unsufferable.
Like, yeah, it's
insufferable. Like, yeah,
he's gotten like obviously you come around on him and it is what it is now, but he seems to just be embodying Mikey early on in The Bear. And now that we've seen so much more of Mikey, you just feel so bad for Richie. Like, this was his best friend, his brother. I know the cousin thing, whatever. But, you know, they were closer than Mikey was with his own brother. And, like, it just, Mikey was so fucking toxic. And, I mean, Richie's still not great, but it's just, I'm not saying it's bad. It's tough to watch. Like, there are parts of it that I really, really enjoyed. And not to jump way ahead, but am I right in assuming, like, at the end is the present day, and it's Richie kind of remembering because he's at the same intersection, and then he gets hit by a car.
I think that he's not. If this is really like, if this is picking up where I think it's picking up, it's literally him thinking about the trip. But like, I don't know if you remember the last part of The Bear, like where they're all leaving. I think that's where this is taking place, is that it's like they're leaving the store, like they're leaving The Bear, like the actual restaurant, and sure. He's reflecting on this and everything that happened during the it's almost like he's reflecting on things, and then it's definitely in the present. He gets like, it's definitely like cut to in the present time in where The Bear is, and he gets T-boned. He gets into an accident. And you're right. Like, Richie was we knew that Mikey was really troubled. We just didn't realize how much of his mother's child he was.
Yeah.
And this episode, like, I have a feeling that this episode was in the middle of the season, and they felt like, go with me on this. Do you think that, like, if it's in the middle of the season, we all hate this episode, but if you take it out and you put it at the, like, you put it 2 months before anything comes out, and you just drop it, and it's a prequel thing, everybody kind of, like, instantly wants to watch it and instantly gets hyped for The Bear.
Yeah. We'll know more once the season drops, because we'll see where Richie is in regards to, like, was he seriously injured? Is it like, what was the car accident? Like, that's, to me, that was the thing I left going like, wait, what the fuck? Like, what is he okay? Like, where's this character gonna be at the start of the season? Does this happen during the season at some point? Like that. But yeah, I think either starting the season with this episode, like as an official part of the episode count, or dropping it somewhere in the season, you know, may have been like, it could have been an idea, like the one episode everybody talks about from what, season two, with all of the guests, like, which is a flashback episode.
Yes, but this is the flashback episode, but instead, yeah,
but this doesn't have that, like, that episode is also a very tough watch, but it's, you know, you get these respites from things, and there's a lot of characters, so it's really engaging and just compulsive, and you're just like, you know, following all these characters. This is just these two people, and one of them, like, just takes a turn and just starts being such a dick that it makes it tough. So I think it does kind of interrupt maybe things. And so, yeah, by itself, it's a much easier thing to accept, but it still did not make it like a super easy watch. Like,
no,
it's just,
it's two guys at the height. Like, the thing that I appreciate from Christopher Storer and why it goes so hard for me, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that what I love about his work, and I'm going to be very interested in see where he goes after The Bear, is he captures moments with people unguarded, and they talk the way that they really talk.
Yeah.
And, like, this is Mikey and Richie, like, at their most unguarded, because it's just them on a trip. So, like, the thing that I found so fascinating was, like, the way that they interact with one another and how unguarded they are, but also, like, when it becomes a thing where, you know, too much coke and too much alcohol has been consumed and imbibed, it so turns on one another. And you get an idea more about you, like the big question has always been, like, we know that Mikey killed himself, or, like, you know, committed suicide, whatever you want to say, but he like, you know, he did, but we never got a picture of who he was as a person. And I feel right. like Gary is more about Mikey than it is about Richie, because ultimately I think, like, what your point was, and you made a very good point, is that you feel sorry for Richie because Richie is the he is the person that he eventually became, right? Like, there was redemption for him. It's that Mikey is the person that he is. And, you know, when you're around that kind of person who is both the Alpha and the Omega, both the Moon and the Sun, I don't know if you, like, I don't know if you've been around those people, but I have in my life. Yes.
I have a sister who is... drugs and alcohol, like, yep. I mean Ryan could be like that too. He was more of a drinker than drugs, but, like, it definitely was these, like, shades of, like, telling you how wonderful you are and how happy they are for you, and then 5 minutes later it's like, you motherfucker, like, because you have something in your life that they don't, and it's maybe that's what made it hard to watch, you know?
Yeah.
Is having that own, like, similar life experience. It's just like, God, man, like, I kind of, like, more than anything, like, whatever with Carmi, like, whatever with the, like, he keeps tripping his own self up, which Richie does too. But, like, Richie is a character that has come so far from where he was in season one.
Yeah.
And put in so much fucking work that, like, watching this, it, like, the one thing, like I said, I hope he's okay when we start the season, but also I hope good things for Richie, like, more than
yes.
any other character, because, like I said, he has put in a lot of work, a lot of self-reflection, a lot of discipline. Like, he's really come a long way as a character, and it was a really tough watch.
It really is. Like, Christina was commenting on that. She's like, you get more of an understanding about Richie's problems and why he went down the drain when we see him. Like, it actually kind of tracks, right? Like, and I was thinking what she was saying. She goes, it tracks because when we first meet him, he is without that rudder. Like, he has always been second fiddle, right? Like, right. If you really think about it, Richie has always been a second fiddle. Like, first to Mikey, and then now to Carmy. But it was that moment, like, in the middle of season three, where he goes and he learns that he can do something on his own, that he becomes his own person. And he truly, yeah. Like, Richie, at the end of the day, I feel like the bear is more about Richie and his, like, he's the broken soul of this show more than Carmy, more than any other character. I feel like he is the one that at the end of the day that Storr relates to. Like, he relates to everybody, and Carmy is the flashy one, but
Storr, he's the skill, right?
Like, yeah.
And Richie doesn't have the, Richie has the like, he can do the work, but he doesn't have the natural talent.
No, that Sid and Carmy do. No, you're right. Or Marcus. She's got,
yeah, and I think that that's part of it is, like, that's the show. Like, Richie's journey is, like, once he understands where he fits into things, like, you see it in the, like, the scheduling stuff.
Yes.
Like, in the last season or so, where he's like, I found the thing that I'm good at.
Yeah.
And he's been playing, like you said, second. This is a weird comparison, but it's kind of similar to, like, what's his name in the Royal Tannenbaum's, where he's like, I just wanted to be a Tannenbaum.
Yep.
And, like, that's him. Like, he wanted to be, like, with this he wanted to be, like, in this family doing these things that they're doing. And he does, but he didn't have the natural talent that they have for some of this stuff. And so that's what, like you said, he's kind of rudderless when we first meet him, because he's kind of running things, and that's not where he shines, you know?
No.
But he's also really upset when Carmy steps in and takes over, and he's like, where the fuck have you been? Like, I've been running this shit, and, like, you're just going to show up and be like, it's mine now. And, yep. Like, there's a lot of conflict there. This is definitely essential for if you're into the bear, but if you're not into the bear, like, I cannot imagine watching this and being like, I must watch the bear. Like, it would have to be like you're into, like, being uncomfortable, because that's all this is. Like, if uncomfortability is, like, your porn, then, like, that's what this is.
Cringe. If you're cringe, like, if you love the cringe, then you're all, this is for you. But
I feel very similarly about the Punisher, that, like, if you're not familiar with this character, like, I cannot imagine watching the Punisher one last kill and being like, I must know everything about the Punisher. Like, it'd be like, why does anybody like this character?
Christina was watching it, and she was just like, what the fuck? Like, she literally walked in and was like, because he was, like, doing the and she was like, what the fuck, like, is this about?
Yeah, it's I mean, Stephanie hasn't watched any of the Bernthal Punisher stuff except for what he's shown up in Daredevil Born Again, because she hasn't even seen the old Netflix Daredevil stuff. So she was like, I'm missing something. I was like, yeah, it's like, it's not the Punisher the way, like, you know, the Punisher, really. Like, it's way more PTSD stuff. Like, it's heavy, heavy. Like, and this more so than maybe anything in any of the other.
Oh, like, yeah.
Like, actual show. Like, it really, really. And we should mention that Bernthal co-wrote both of these scripts.
Oh, yeah.
And so, it, like, this is a lot of Bernthal influence. And I, you know, maybe that's a good thing. But also, maybe at some point, somebody should be like, we got to dial it back and give a little something for some people to like. Like,
yep.
the last 10, 15 minutes of this Punisher special, which, A, I get it. It is just a special, but you're touting it. You're making it seem like this is his swan song as the Punisher. Like, except for we know he's going to be in Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But, like, and this is Disney's first real, like, under the Disney Marvel banner, like, real hard R, like, Punisher thing.
Yeah, and, like, I was gonna, yeah, like, it feels disingenuous, doesn't it?
Yeah, it, well, I get you want to deal with a lot of the, like, trauma of the character.
Yeah.
But for a lot of people, this is going to be their first true exposure to Punisher because it's the first big thing under the Marvel banner. And he's not that he should be likable. He's not a character I can root for in this at all. Like, he comes around, but, like, there's a lot of shit going down. And also, like, you kill a dog to start. Like,
that, yeah. That
fucking. Like, I get how you're trying to be brutal and be like, this is no holds barred. Like, we're going balls to the wall. But, like, I don't know. I can't imagine. As soon as I saw that, I was like, Adam probably turned this off.
I did not.
Stephanie,
but I was
probably like, wanted to turn it off.
I was like, okay, Bernthal, I know that you're an active dog lover. Like, he's an active dog lover and activist. It's like, okay, where are you going to go with this? And so, like, it was like, it was like, I guess it was trying to set the tone for, like, whatever this thing was, which was, like, a lot of, like, like, it was a lot of, like, weird, like, method acting stuff with, like, him looking like a bum, and then finally, like, at the end being, like, bum, like, bum fight fucking Frank, which I, like, it's a wild thing, like, it's a vibe. And I appreciated it because it felt like, you know what it felt like to me? And a lot of people are going to turn on this once the dust settles, is it felt like, okay, like, it felt like, do you watch Bond films? Do you watch the Daniel Craig Bond films?
I've seen all of them except the last one.
Okay, good, good, good. It felt like Quantum of Solace. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, after the high of Casino Royale, after the series, which is, like, to me, Punisher Netflix is the actual best of all of those series.
It's fucking great. Like,
it's amazing.
It's so good.
Yes, it is so good. It is so, like, E-Bom is in that. Like, his character, like, everything about it. And
yeah, it's so weird to think that, like, that's where
they started their
their
weird collab, their toxic collab. Like, it's like, it's like the most toxic bromance of all time that
and
continues
they just
on two
keep
series.
Getting back together.
Yes, and they keep on being shitty to one another. But it's also it feels like Quantum of Solace because I don't think that people really understand that Quantum of Solace is like a prologue to the epicness that is Casino Royale. It's about a guy dealing, like, it's a postscript. It's not. It's like an hour and 40 minutes. It's not a Bond adventure. It's this thing where it's like Bond goes through this, the worst thing that he could ever do. He falls in love and Vesper dies. Spoilers for a 60-year-old storyline, right? But it's what made Bond James Bond. It's what makes him go through women, right? But he's working through his shit. I think that Punisher One Last Kill is kind of like the end of the Netflix series, but they didn't tout it as that. They talked about it as the end of the character. And when it really should be, this is the end of the Netflix series. This is the manga noosh, the mom nooshy like storyline stuff that we kind of want to give you an end for, but also know that if he wants to return, he can always return, and there's going to be more to this. This is the bridge gap between what Marvel is going to do and what Netflix did, right?
Yeah.
Like, and it's very weird. It's very, like I said, it's very methody. It's very kind of like, if you were into dudes like seeing flashbacks of people, go, are you real? Are you real? Like, literally, that's all of his line deliveries in the movie. I could not believe it. Like, I sat there for like 3 days doing like Brenthal impersonations. Like, when Deborah Ann Wall as
Karen, yeah,
shows up, and he like, I was like, he should just murder her. He's such in a fucking weird place that it wouldn't be out of the ordinary for him to stab her.
No, stab her.
It's wild. It's wild because like then when it starts, like what Ma Nucci does with the whole like I much would have rather have had that than this whole like killing the dog, like beating up the homeless dude, like the poor veteran dude. But I mean, you know, with all Brenthal things, he has to make it about vets for some reason in this series. Like going to the grave and like crying, are you real? Are you real? I don't know, man. It's wild. Like, I liked the action. Like, the action was good, right? Like it was very kind of raw and gritty, but everything else was kind of like, I don't know, man. Like, is it, like, what are we, like, what, like, ultimately, what are we supposed to get out of this that we haven't gotten out of, like, Frank before? And, like, to your point, what are we supposed to get out of, like, is this supposed to bring in new people?
I can't imagine that it brings in anybody new or sends people to watch the old Punisher show, because it's such a down thing. Like, it is so grim, and there is a certain sect of people, Snyder Bros,
yeah,
who will, you know, flock to this and be like, you know, the Joker people, you know, like, this is what
I'm this, like, is the Punisher.
Yeah And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's a version of it, but like, it also doesn't have to be this fucking dark. Like, even the end, which is kind of like him taking the mantle back up.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good, you know, like, and I don't know. It's well shot. Except for one shot.
Oh my God. The AI shot that everybody's been talking about.
It's so bad. Like, I don't know why you didn't just old school that or do away. Like, and no, it could be one of those things, like how it's still rendering, and like when we watch it a year from now, they'll be like, well, here's a version that's actually good. But yeah, that I can't believe they left that shot in. It's I get it. Like, they shot it practically. It was a stunt man, and then they CGI'd Bernthal's face on top of it, but it looks so fucking bad.
It really does.
Like, it throws you out of it. Like, it's a Debbie Downer of a thing. And I love John Bernthal. I think he's a phenomenal actor. I'm looking forward to what him and Nolan collabing looks and feels like.
With his accent. Like, can we just talk about for a second?
He is, I love him. He is one note.
Yes.
Like, that is, he has that one thing, and that's it. That's what he can do. And he does it really, really well.
Yeah. It's very like, he's very much a New Yorker. Like, you can't see him in anything else other than a New Yorker or a guy from Chicago. Like, I can't remember what there was a TV show that Frank Darabont did that took place in the 1950s, and he's in it and he plays a cop. And I swear to God, that was the most perfectly cast thing that he's ever been in, because he's like a boxer slash cop. And it's just like, that's what he is. Like he's so kind of like Brando that it's too much Brando. Like, I don't know. I love what he does. I really do. But at the same time, like, I almost feel like, yeah, he's talking about, this is like his commitments. Like, he had, like, he wanted to get out of his contract. And I feel like that's not true. I feel like we're going to find out in about a year to 18 months that he's going to come back and he's going to do a series. I think that he just needs some time away from it. But ultimately, I think it's his bread and butter, because he's born to play Frank Castle. Like, I don't know anybody else. Like, you can't not have him play Frank Castle. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, when Holland decides to stop playing Spider-Man, they're going to have to take some time away. They're going to have to at least...
It's just not... A lot of the Netflix era, like, casting is pitch perfect. Nobody else can play those roles.
Yeah.
Like, I'm excited that everybody's seemingly coming back for Daredevil next season. We're going to get that whole Defenders crew.
So
back,
crew.
Including Finn Jones, who,
yep.
Like, let's give him a second chance. Not necessarily his fault. Like, much like Hayden Christensen, maybe it's not his fault, guys.
No.
That show was just not very good.
I think that he got saddled with the Danny Rand character, which is a troubling character. Like, there's no way around that. Like, I don't think... Like, there's a way to do the Danny Rand character, but it's just...
Well, the problem is they didn't lean... into the troubling aspect.
Exactly.
Like, I'm a defender of, like, leaving that character, which it sounds bad, like I'm a white dude talking about, like, no, leave that character white. But I think it's about the appropriation. Is that's what the story is that he shouldn't have it.
No.
And all of the people are, like, in that culture agreeing that he shouldn't have it, and maybe him coming to understand that he shouldn't have this power, and like finding a way to make that, to equalize that, you know?
Absolutely.
And like, they didn't embrace that. They were just like, oh no, of course it became just a standard superhero, like, fucking Arrow or whatever. It just was that kind of slop, and like, so it just wasn't special. But
no.
That casting across the board, like, if you bring those characters back with different actors, none of it is going to work. Like, no. You cannot bring in a new Frank Castle. It just wouldn't work. You cannot bring in a new Daredevil. It just wouldn't work. It's like introducing Matt Murdock in the last Spider-Man movie. If you don't get Charlie Cox, like, I'm sorry, man. It would have been like, people are going to revolt, because, like, fuck this. Like, Charlie Cox is Daredevil, man. Like, he just is, you know. And, you know, Tom Holland also, like you're saying, I actually, the Marvel casting, almost to a fucking point, has been spot on. Like, few and far between have they really, like, missed the mark. Rarely. Like, the Eternals casting is great. It's just that movie is not very good. So, One Last Kill. It's one of those things where it's like, I can't say I don't know who this is for. I know who this is for. It's just that, like, I don't want that fandom in, like, the Marvel stuff, you know?
Yeah, but also, like, so, like, my thing is this. I'll leave it with this, is that, if they're preoccupied with Punisher, and Punisher is as often as one-off world, we don't have to worry about them contaminating anything else.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they'll get their we'll get our PG-13 version of Punisher in Brand New Day. And I'm fairly certain, like, here's the thing. I think that people are making a bigger deal about him being in the film than he is. I think he's only going to be in the opening moments. That's just
yeah.
me.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't think he's going to be a huge part of Spider-Man. So I think the Hulk is or Banner at least is going to be a much bigger role.
Yes.
than what we're seeing. It's not going to be this very brief thing. So, but we'll see. I'm super excited for Spider-Man. And not because of the Punisher stuff. Although it would be great to have him in like classic Punisher, like giant white go-go boots, you know, kind of look. We're not going to get it, but it would be kind of cool. All right. So, you got to see a movie on the big screen that I saw last week, but it was after we recorded.
Yes. And
so very briefly, we both saw The Sheep Detectives and, is it weird to say I think this is one of the best movies of the year?
Not at all. Not at all. Like it's a charmer. Like it's literally Babe for adults. That's it. And it's weirder that it's written by Craig Mazin, who wrote one of the most dour fucking episodic television, has written two of the most dour episodic televisions in Chernobyl and Last of Us. Yeah. Just utterly charming, like utterly charming and passionately told.
Nothing about Craig Mazin wrote the screenplay, like you said, like the cast does not scream like this is going to be a it feel like you look at something like all of the writer, the director, the casting, and you're like, this feels like paychecks for everybody, and this is going to be something that I'm not going to like. It's just going to be like, oh yeah, everybody just showed up, collected their check, and was like, what am I doing? Fuck it. But that's not what happens.
No, not at all.
It's almost like Iron Giant-ish, where it's like, this shouldn't work, but it fucking does.
And like, you find yourself jawing because you don't want to cry, but you kind of like, there's a couple of moments that they earn, like they really earn. It's even
goofy stuff is earned. Like, so yeah. Brett Goldstein plays a dual role in this, as these two sheep that like are rams that like to just bash things.
Yep.
And like, there's a payoff with them that's so goofy, but so fulfilling.
Yeah.
Like it's so fantastic. It's so sweet that like, I don't really even want to talk about the plot because it's a murder mystery.
Yes.
And like the resolution, it's Benoit Blanc level of like, that's genius and also kind of a little ridiculous
and a little stupid, but perfect. It is. And like the cast, like from top to bottom, it's like, it's what the first Knives Out movie was, which was perfectly cast.
Yeah.
Like everybody, not just the voice cast, but the live action cast is perfectly done. Like, I mean, this is a bear, like a bear cast eating kind of podcast, because Molly Gordon is in this, and like she like has had the most thankless role in the bear, and she kind of has a thankless role here, but. Yeah. Like her and Nicholas Braun's chemistry in the way that it works is so good. Like she is so good in this, in the big cell at the end, because you can't kind of do the big cell at the, this doesn't work without her being as good as she is in this movie. Yeah. It's just all around, like, you kind of, like, on paper, like you said, it shouldn't work.
I mean, Emma Thompson shows up as this lawyer who, like
you automatically point to and go, yeah, stranger and like, danger.
Yeah, immediately. And she's just chewing fucking scenery and, like, playing, like, towing this line of, like, am I the bad guy? Am I a good guy? I don't know. Yeah. And, like, everything about it is just so fun and so delightful. And it's done okay, but I feel like this is going to be one of those movies that winds up much like The Iron Giant, where it's like, doesn't make a huge, huge splash, but like 10 years from now, it's going to be like, man, The Sheep Detectives is so fucking good. Like, why didn't that become a thing? And it just didn't become a thing because nobody rushed out to see it because just whatever. There's a lot playing. Like, we're all going to see fucking Devil Wears Prada and Michael 17 times. Yeah. So, you know, and it's fine. Like, it's fine. Like, it's getting, like, good reviews. Like, that's the thing. Like, people that are seeing it are going like, oh yeah, this is fucking wonderful. More of this, please.
Well, and also, like, I will be, like, everybody's saying, like, the second week is going to be the key here. Like, if it makes the same amount of money as it did the first weekend, and then we know that it's going to be one of those slow risers. Like, we saw it on a Wednesday night at 4 p.m., and it was a packed house.
That's good.
It was good. A packed house. Like, and that's how you know that the biddies are seeing it. Yeah. That,
well, like, I mean, we saw it on a Saturday afternoon, and nothing's ever packed here. And it was probably one of the fuller screenings we've had. There was probably like 25 other people there. So, yeah. Which was, and a lot of them, like, parents and kids, or like grandparents and grandkids, like groups like that. So that was pretty nice. Like, I can't wait till I'm going to watch it again when it hits home video. Like, I had such a good time with it. So,
yeah, it's utterly delightful. And, like, that's the thing that it's clever, but it's also emotional, and it's funny, and it's surprising. I don't think you can discount the work that both, Julie Louise Dreyfus and Bryan Cranston do.
Yeah.
As the lead
Stewart. Patrick Stewart as the, like, old, like, not wizened, just he's like just the old guy. You know? Yeah. There is a joke. I'm gonna spoil a joke, but the joke about them crossing the street.
Yes.
Like, it works the first time, but the second time, it's fucking slays, man.
Yep.
The first time, it's like they don't understand what it is and that they can cross it. But then there's a second, like, they bring it back around where they refuse to cross. And they're like, how could we possibly cross this? And then a chicken crosses the road, and it's pitch fucking perfect. Where it's just like, that is such a stupid joke, and you landed it, man. Like, just, it's so just delightful. And, you know, I wish there were more movies like that. It was back to back movies. Like, we saw that the end of last weekend, and then the movie we saw this week, like, if you want to jump into it, also, yeah. It's like, I wish there were more movies like this. Because In the Gray is, first of all, it's a nothing title. So, unfortunately, this movie will absolutely get lost in the sauce. Like, it may not make a big splash in the theater. It would be a movie that could be a breakout on a streamer. Unfortunately, it has a name that nobody's ever going to fucking remember.
No.
Because it's so bland.
Yeah, it's very, like, it's like, you couldn't have come up with something better? Like, and it's a Guy Ritchie film, which requires, yeah, like, clever, like
almost, but, always, right?
Like, yeah.
I mean, he has a few here and there, I guess, that are just like, yeah, that's kind of a nothing title, but like
Wrath of Man.
Yeah, but like, there's so many Guy Ritchie movies that, like, the title alone, like, oh, that, you hear it and you're like, oh, that sounds like a Guy Ritchie film.
Yeah.
Because it is.
Absolutely. Like Operation Fortune, Ruse de Guerre. Yeah. Like, but then occasionally he'll, like, The Covenant is very kind of plain Jane. But, like, this is, like, I said something to you, I think the last time we talked about Guy Ritchie, which is that he is on this run that I feel like, in, like, you know, you were just talking about Sheep Detectives, about how, like, in a decade, we're going to look at Sheep Detectives and, like, we slept on it. Like, we're going to look back in a decade when Ritchie is back to doing, like, blockbusters in his 60s, and we're going to look at his work in his 40s and 50s and go, this man was churning out, every 18 months, he was churning out a banger. And there's not one that you cannot not appreciate for what it is. Like,
yeah.
And working with a level of cast and doing stuff that's just like, it's not, well, like,
I mean, it's back to back for sure. Like,
yeah,
we loved Ministry. Like,
yeah, we Ministry is
love that fucking movie.
Yeah.
And this, I don't think this hits as good, but no, it's pretty fucking close. Like, I walked out going, and I texted you, I was like, can I have a remake of, like, Tango and Cash with Henry Cavill
and Jake Gyllenhaal.
And Jake Gyllenhaal, yep, like, directed by Guy Ritchie. Because that's, like, if this movie lacks one thing, it's, like, it needs 30 more minutes to give us more of their stuff. You know?
Yes.
Like, because when they're together and, like, just, it's not even riffing, because it's not that level of, like, showmanship. It is deadpan kind of, like, going at each other with this dry wit thing that's very fucking Guy Ritchie.
Yes. And
it's perfect. Like, not to bring them up again, I know if you say it three times, they show up. But the Snyder Bros can fuck off with the Henry Cavill Superman stuff. It was fine. I wish we got more of it, but whatever. This is where he lives and breathes, man.
Yes. Henry
Cavill's so fucking good at just being this, like, presence and, like, saying, like, it's not, he doesn't need to be, like, super loquacious, you know? Like, the few things that he says, it's just like, oh yeah, I follow that guy into hell, man. Like,
no, absolutely,
it's so good. And then Jake Gyllenhaal just gets to be this, like, his smart ass little brother almost, you know?
No, it's absolutely, like, that's the best comparison, is that these guys are like, they're contractors. They're government like they're from special forces, but they have a certain skill set, right? And they are men of few words, but the things that they say are so pithy and so kind of like it's exactly what you would expect from these two guys, right? Who wear sunglasses all the time. Who, like, there's a certain sector of men that think that they're this and they're not. They're fucking jokes. And like you said, like, Snyder Bros can go fuck themselves. But that's what these...
That's three times. Now they're going to show up.
Yeah, they are. In the comments and downloading our fucking episode. Well, you know what? You can get us hits, buddy. You guys can get us hits. But it's weird because it's like, there's this whole thing of, like, they're doing a thing that most people cannot do. Like, even Ryan Gosling can't do this.
No.
Like, Ryan Gosling is like, we saw, like, okay, so, like, I read,
he comes, like, off as, like, a goofier version. Like,
yes,
they're not goofy. They're funny, no, but they're not goofy. It's so, like, cool. There's not a better. It's so fucking cool.
Yes, they're cool. To quote Patricia Arquette from True Romance, you're so fucking cool.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, is that it's what Guy Ritchie does best, which is like cool dudes doing cool shit with cool women doing cool shit. Because
very similar to Soderbergh, right?
Yeah.
When it's on. Like, nobody does it better than this. Like, they know how to write this shit. They know how to direct it. They know how to cast it. Like, they know what it looks like. And, like, when Richie's on, like, it's really fucking on. And it's, like, they make everything look so cool. But, like, here's the one thing I gotta imagine you're with me on this, that really, really appreciate, that I feel like some people may not appreciate if they watch this movie, is like there's so many action movies with like groups of people or even just a couple of people where they do things and like it becomes this unbelievable thing of like, yeah, you took me out of it, because like there's no way all of that just happened, right? And this movie is about showing you that like that stuff doesn't just happen. They've so meticulously planned and rehearsed every single thing.
Yes.
That, like, it's not like, oh, we just came up with this exit plan. These motherfuckers have 4 exit strategies.
Well, okay, so, like, what I love about the movie is that it's, like, the first half, and this is where I now know, I understand, like, as soon as I started watching...
It's not even the half. I think it's almost the first full hour of the movie.
Is process.
It's all about the process and setting up the last like 25 minutes of the movie. But fuck it. Those 25 minutes, I'm like gripping the fucking armrest on my chair. And like every time something goes wrong, it's like a dagger in my heart. And I'm like, fuck, they didn't think about a drone with a bomb strapped to it. Like, fuck, they didn't think about who would have to... Well, they knew who would have to cover up. They didn't think the house would get swarmed and that one of them would get trapped in the house and not be able to get to the, like, and they lose 2 guys. But, like, they lose 2 guys, but, like, they show, it's kind of, like, very similar to the shark thing where it's, like, Chekhov's gun. But it's not that they're showing you that there's a gun. They spent the first hour of the movie showing you every single possible exit thing.
Yep.
And then, like, showing you rehearsing those things, or them rehearsing those things, and then 25 minutes showing it all play out almost exactly like they rehearsed it. They're just giving it to you again, but in such a fashion that it's so exciting. And again, so fucking cool. And then you just get this little like postscript thing at the end that's definitely a Richie tag of like something happened, but like we don't know what that something is until right at the very end, you know, where they get her off the island and they're like, we'll catch you up. And then, like, all of a sudden, she's back on land. She's gotten her payday. And Isaac Gonzalez, like, we're leaving her out. Like,
this is her third movie with Guy Ritchie. And there's a reason why. She does Guy Ritchie dialogue with, it's like,
so
this.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
She brings,
like, even the stupid, cheesy narration. It's like, she's so good at it.
She brings, like, it's like weird because Richie has never had like sexy in his movies, but in the last 3 movies that he's done with her, like, there's a reason why he keeps on hiring her. And I feel it in my bones. Like, I'm not trying to be a creep. It's just, she brings this breathy, like, this breathy, sexy intelligence to everything that
intelligence is, because you're right. Like, it's an intelligent damsel in distress. She's not playing the, like, I'm getting rescued and I'm screaming, I'm throwing my hands and waving wildly. Like,
yeah,
she's the intelligence, and like, she believes in her guys. She knows they're going to come for her. Like, are they all going to make it out? Like, what? Like, but she doesn't show like any real like fright to the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and she, there's no like, oh, we got to have a moment here where like, she's proven she's strong and capable. She's not strong and capable in the way that they're strong and capable, because that's not who her character is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, she, like, between this and Mike, Nick, and Alice, like, yeah, like, having a great year. Like, I feel like, it's weird because she has this, like, the visual look of her is, like, very Megan Fox, but she is not Megan Fox. Like, and I feel like her looks are almost a check mark against her, because you watch her in Ministry and this and Mike and Nick and Nick and Alice. I have to say that shit slow because I can never remember it. And like, her looks are a detriment. Like, it's weird because her looks are a detriment because she's so fucking good. Like, Ministry, the whole movie kind of like is put on her shoulders because she's having to be basically the James Bond of that movie. Yeah. Yeah. She's like, I know that the movie is hated by a lot of people and a lot of people hated it, but I enjoyed Richie's Fountain of Youth. And part of the reason is because she's kind of great in it.
Yeah. I talked about it a few weeks ago when I went on a little Guy Ritchie run. And I didn't hate it, but like, it just was a little like, I've seen all of this before. Like,
yes,
you wanted to make a Indiana Jones, like,
but it came off it came off more like National Treasure, but a bad National Treasure.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the cast. I think the action in it's great, and you know, it's fun, but it's not, I don't think it's not Guy Ritchie at his peak. And this is almost like Guy Ritchie back to like Ministry is like up there for me for,
yeah,
Guy Ritchie.
This is Ministry. This is like second era. Like, there's two eras of Guy Ritchie, right? And what separates them, I think, is Sherlock Holmes. There's the Snatch, rock and rolla, like, you know, that era. And then there's the one that happens after that is game to do anything, like Aladdin, The Gentleman. But also, he's getting into this thing where it's like, Man from U.N.C.L.E., I really like doing that kind of stuff. Yeah. So let me do that. And it's like, this, The Man from U.N.C.L.E., Ministry. I know you didn't like Operation Fortune all that much, but it's still a part of that.
Fun. Yes. Much like Fountain of Youth, like, I think it's fun. I just think it's a little, I think, it tries to do too much. Like, I know Richie likes to throw a lot of shit into like twist and turns and like, you know, things you don't, but like Operation Fortune, I felt it got a little on the ridiculous side. And this, like, this, that's why I appreciated that. Like, he spent so much of the movie showing you the setup for the thing. You know, like,
yes,
it's like, I'm going to show you how I'm going to do the magic trick, and then I'm going to do the magic trick, and you're going to be like, I loved it.
Did you see Wrath of Man yet?
No.
Okay. That's on Amazon Prime. I feel like you should watch that.
Yeah.
That is Richie trying to do, like, that's Richie directing from an iPad during the pandemic, but like, has his old dude Jason Statham, and they just decided to do a badass heist film.
Yeah.
Like it's really great. Like, it's like, and you're talking about process, that is just like that process. But yeah, like, I'm very excited in the next like year to 18 months what the next fucking thing that he does is. Because, like, let's be honest, he, like, he continually, like, he doesn't surprise, but he always surprises. Like, that, does that make sense?
Yeah. It's, and, you know, you mentioned The Gentleman. Like, I also recently watched the movie The Gentleman, which, again, I wasn't super impressed with. Great cast, but, like, it was a little, like, it was a little too much. And this could have been, like, that level. And but I also think it also could have worked on the way The Gentleman worked. On, like, I didn't love it as a movie. Watched that TV show, and I was like, oh, this is good. Like, yeah. That show is pretty fucking good. And it's right up, like, it's peak, like, perfect Guy Ritchie shit. And this could, like, I also feel like if you had laid this out over, like, 8 episodes and, like, given me, like, hour-long or 45-minute-long segments of them, like, doing, setting things up. Because I could have spent 2 more hours in this world with these characters.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I would love nothing more than to see two things. A sequel to Ministry and a sequel to this.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Like, and this almost feels like if we found out that Ministry was a prequel to In the Gray, I would not be surprised. Because the guys that, like, you know, like the same characters were, like, their great-great-grandfathers. Like, okay, that tracks. That absolutely tracks. Because they're cut from the same cloth, but it's also Ritchie operating in the same kind of thing of, like, I like process. And I think that that's what I love about Ritchie is that, like Michael Mann, he gets into the weeds about, like, I don't, like, you know, the execution is just as important, but I really like process. I really like, you can tell he loves making movies, and that's why he makes so many of them. And this is kind of like these last couple of films have been a reflection of that to me. Like, oh, I'm going to make movies about movies, but I'm not going to tell you that they're about movies, because it's like, who are the worst humans in the world? Finance bros. Yeah. And who have been the last couple of, like, you know, like, bad guys in his films? Finance bros and fascists.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, literally.
That's this whole movie. And, like, it is like, oh, I'm against the fucking fascists and the finance bros. Like, that's who they are fighting in this movie.
Yes.
And, like, it's. I don't know. It's so much fun and just, like I said, so fucking cool. And I don't know. Like, give me more Cavill and Gyllenhaal just doing this. Like, I know it's a lot of them just standing around looking cool and, like, saying, like, sort of pithy thing here or there. But, like, I don't know. It really worked for me.
I am on the same, like, wavelength as you. It just, like, it's a certain type of movie. Like, it's almost like it's a trilogy, because it's the Cavill trilogy. It starts with The Man from U.N.C.L.E., and then it goes to Ministry, and then it almost, like, comes to a head where you lean everything out and make it a 95-minute movie about the same stuff. It's just, it's done in the modern era, and that's what it is. This is the third one.
I don't think any director has used Cavill as well as Guy Ritchie has used Cavill.
No, like, I agree with you.
I don't. He gets what makes that man, like, just pop on screen. Like, he was great as Superman, fine. Like, the other stuff here and there, like, the Cavalrine was fun when he showed up in Deadpool for 5 seconds. But, like, Ritchie just gets it, man. The closest thing is his Mission Impossible movie. That's the next closest thing. But even then, like, I don't think that character has the same charisma and, like, appeal as his character in, even in this. Like, because it's very similar, because he doesn't say a lot, and he's just, intimidating on screen, you know? So I love bumbling Jake Gyllenhaal, like pretending to be not bumbling, but just kind of like he's bratty almost.
Yeah. You know?
It's just, I don't know. I loved it. I thought it was so freaking great. I'm glad we kept going back and forth between this and Obsession, which everybody's talking about.
So I actually saw that a while ago. I did not like it.
Okay.
I did not like it. And I'll tell you why, is that it's a story that should have been told with a female voice that's told with a male voice and a very male voice. It's okay. It is, both sides have good points of view, the movie. So you know how like the movie is set up with this whole monkey's paw thing? Like you make a wish and you regret it.
Yeah.
So the movie starts off with a very high concept. I liked the idea, but then what ends up happening is that there's a moment where it turns in on itself and it goes, well, you know, she could have been a psycho all along and really toxic. And you're really supposed to sympathize with the dude. And at that point is when I turned on the movie. And it became this thing where I'm like, no, I didn't want to talk about it just because I'd seen it and I was like, I had such a vitriolic reaction to it. I saw it the same day I saw Mando and Grogu. And it was just like, I was hoping that it was going to be like what everybody is saying it's going to be, but it just wasn't for me. So I'll be curious to know what you think of it, because I'm still curious.
I'm sure we'll see it eventually. Next week is definitely Mandalorian and Grogu.
Yes. Which I'm very, 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 very curious about what you think. I'm very curious. Like, I'm going to hold my thoughts about it. I have a lot of thoughts, but I'm very curious.
Can just tell me that it's better than Rise of Skywalker?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay.
The bar is in hell for Star Wars movies now. All you got to do is just be better than Rise of Skywalker, and I'm okay.
Yeah, no. It is better than Rise of Skywalker. I will say this. I think that this movie is going to be personally dependent on your taste in movies. Yeah. And I will this is going to be a Rorschach test for fandom. I will say, this is what I will say, is that this is definitely a Rorschach test for fandom, because coming out of it, I heard very different reactions to this. I heard people, because I got to see it at, like, so that people know, I got to see it at the screening that wasn't the premiere. So all of the A-list, I got invited with somebody that I know. I don't get it twisted. I'm not this kind of person. I got invited by a journalist friend of mine that knows that I like these things, that I knows that I like this. And she's an A-list journalist. I am not. But I was in the same thing as, like, say, the Ringerverse people. And all of the A-list podcasters and people that aren't Jermaine Lussier that get invited to the premieres.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, they're not
that
the
motherfucker.
But he's always like, but I mean, we know, like,
he's great.
Yeah. But I will say this, going through the lobby afterwards and the 30 minutes that people were just talking in the lobby, there were Star Wars fans that loved it and hated it. There were non-fans that loved it and hated it. There are so many different reactions that I heard off the side of my ear that it felt like it was a Rorschach test. It's almost like, well, we're going to give you this, and this is the movie.
Yeah.
There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, but this is the movie. I will say this much. you can take this movie and it is a Star Wars movie, but you don't need to know anything about Star Wars, including Mandalorian and Grogu.
Oh, well, Stefan will be glad to hear that, since I basically strong-armed her into binging all of The Mandalorian and Book of Boba Fett.
you don't need it, but there are certain things that will enhance your knowledge, but it won't be a make-or-break thing. Like, well, they don't make it, and it's... I think that the reference points for this movie are very different than what I feel like people are expecting it to have reference points to.
Well, I'm excited for it. I'm a little, like, that gives me a little hope, because, like, my worry going in was, like, God, I don't want this to be, like, my new worst fucking Star Wars movie.
I'll be honest with you, it could be, but... Like that's the kind of tightrope that Favs and Filoni are running. I don't, like, I honestly, the reason why I say I'm so interested is because I honestly don't know how you're going to react to it. I know how I reacted to it. I really know how I reacted to it, and I had a reaction to it. But also everybody had a reaction to it. Like, that's the, like, I know that sounds weird, but the worst thing I think that a Star Wars film can have is indifference.
Yeah, I agree with you. Like, you know, the indifferent thing would be worse than, like, oh, I didn't really like that. So
yes, we'll talk offline. Like, I can answer you some questions if you want, so that you're prepared. Yeah,
I'm okay going in as blind as I am. You know, I think we're seeing it Thursday, because Friday we're going to a Braves game. So so yeah, we're gonna see it next Thursday afternoon. So yeah, but next week's all Star Wars talk, unless we, you know, find something else that, which I'm not, all my shows are kind of, other than Widow's Bay, man, like everything's kind of on in a lull for me. So
yeah, I mean, well,
hopefully you can catch up to that this week.
We just started Margo Has Money Problems, and I know that's finishing up next week. Yeah, I think too, right?
It's good. That's also a tough watch. Like,
that
it's good.
It's way rewarding.
way more dramatic than I thought it was going to be. Thought it was going to be more of a, like, not sitcom, but just more of a comedy, but it winds up being a pretty dramatic thing. And cast is fucking great. So,
oh God, Nick Offerman is, like, if he's not going to get a nomination out of this, I will be very upset. Like, it's really good.
He's doing some great work there. Anyway, all right. So until then, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yeah, themovieowl.com, where I took a little bit of a break because it was my birthday and I had a lot of things to do.
Happy belated birthday.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Absolutely.
I'm a jerk. I didn't text you.
Dude, we're at the point now where we're nearing 50, and, you know, we text enough to where it's like, it don't matter. It don't matter. Like, us 50-year-old dudes, like, I mean, we're not 50. We're, like, you know, respectively, I am now 48. Respectively, 47 and 48. Like, it is not a... For me, it is not a big deal that you didn't text me. I mean, I care more about you texting me about the stuff that you're watching and the stuff that we're watching together than I do about a birthday wish. And I mean, next week, maybe we will also talk about the fact, like, speaking of my birthday, I got a birthday gift. I got a Switch 2 for my wife.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, so I've been on that, playing some games there, because I've got a little bit of a lull in the PS5 until the Bond game comes out, and then also I actually pre-ordered the Star Fox and I'm gonna play the Batman game on the Lego Batman game. I'm gonna play that on the Switch too. I can talk to you about that, and then, like, some of the free stuff that they give you, that's pretty cool. which is going to probably force me into playing the last Zelda game, which I don't know if I'm looking forward to or not. So, but we'll see. We'll see. But we'll be back next week talking Star Wars.
Yeah. So we'll see you guys then. Number one Star Wars, number two comics, number three Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number four Mario, number five Weird Al, number six Batman, number seven Cal, number eight The Simpsons, number nine TV, number ten every single band that has stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say hello together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything.